I only refer to what's happening at a joint, okay? But you have no idea how many times I hear things are dislocated over the phone, okay? So those two things only happen relative to a joint, okay? All right, go to the lateral. The apex of the fracture, when they described it as having a slight apex lateral angulation, the apex is the point of the fracture. So if you were to take this, into another extreme, and it was angulated, if the fracture is angulated, say 45 degrees, it would be the direction that the apex of the bend is pointing. Okay, and so it is angulated very slightly laterally, so we call that apex laterally. And it's not just because there's a point of bone here. That's not what I'm talking about. It has to do with the angulation of the fracture. Okay, and you could describe that as apex lateral or angulated medially, the distal fragment again, 10 to 15 degrees. Okay, this is the lateral. Okay, pseudolateral. Go to... Yeah, it's pseudolateral. That's all we got. Okay. Yeah, we do. Go to the floral.
This one here?
Yep. Okay. This is a floral image. Okay, taken in the hip spikic ass, which is how we treat this in a 3-year-old. This is a lateral, better lateral than what you got. Is there any angulation here? Yes. Describe the angulation. What's that? Distal fragment angulated posteriorly or apex anterior, okay, would be another way to say that, probably 20 degrees, okay? Any displacement? Displacement probably less than 10-15%, okay? Which in this kid is more than acceptable, and there's no malrotation, we made sure of that. Okay, if you could just take and do that, you could squeeze those two together and be anatomic. Okay, so this is fine. Okay, and just so you see, just you know how to scroll floral images?
Scroll down. But
yeah, exactly. Just scroll down to the. There you go. This is how he is in the hip spike cast. He's got about 50% displacement in this view, but he's straight. Okay, he'll heal up fine. All right, go to the Mary's film. So displacement, angulation. Okay. Now we're gonna. I want to show you this guy. Okay. All right. This patient. Big surprise. Came into St. Mary's. This happened like 24 hours before. He doesn't remember because he was hammered. You know, his ankle really hurt, so he came in. Okay. Who wants to describe this one for me? Anyone, Bueller?
Fracture of the distal fibula with disruption of the mortise, the talus is displaced laterally.
Okay. Okay. We'll look at some other views. But what I want to ask you is, you're right, it's a distal fibula fracture. The mortise is disrupted. You said the talus is displaced. What direction?
Laterally.
Probably 30%. Okay. What other word could you use for this? Is it dislocated? You have all the views there are to have, too, by the way. Pretty much.
Is
okay. What did you say?
Subluxation.
Right. It's subluxed laterally. Okay? Subluxationally about 30%. Or you could, I'm okay with you saying displaced here. Okay? Relative to the fracture is displaced almost 100%. The mortise is sublux probably 30%. It's not dislocated, and that's hard to say with only one view, but on the lateral view you can see talus is still underneath the tibia. Okay? So, the joint's not dislocated. It is sublux. Okay? You see that you have a fibular fracture. There isn't any other tibia fracture. This is called a what? I can't hear anybody. Yes, it's a bimal equivalent, okay? And it's unstable, all right? So this has to be fixed. Even though it's just a fibular fracture, you have to reduce it. And go to the what's that? I know there'll be a fight about this, but I'll tell you my feeling. Okay? Ankle, two views left. This is in a splint. That's a lateral. Looks excellent. Okay. There's the reduction. Really, pretty good reduction. They don't have a pure mortise view. You've got a good AP. You don't have a pure mortise view. Dr. Roller did this over at St. Mary's. What's that? Oh, good. Hey, good. Good for you. Okay. He didn't give you any credit over the phone, by the way. He said he would reduce it. Well, I just take that back. He told me about it over the phone. He didn't say you were working with him. And then you guys did the reduction, but I didn't know you did. Great job. Okay. So here's the thing, and this is why it's a great, awesome reduction. Okay. And what this reduction does is it buys me and this patient time. Okay. And we've probably talked about this before, but Dr. Wagner was talking about when do you fix this, okay? There are some surgeons that put this guy in the hospital and fix him the next day, okay? Whenever I have particularly ankle fractures that are subluxed dislocated, okay, as long as they're congruently reduced, and this one is, I'll wait a week to 10 days, let the swelling come down, okay, and ensure that I have a good soft tissue envelope to work with, to work through. The other reason I do it is most of these patients are adults that don't have any learning curve for using crutches, walkers, and in this guy's case, he's a drinker. Okay? If they're going to screw up on a pair of crutches or a walker and fall and wipe out again, I'd much prefer they do that when it's already broken as opposed to after I fixed it. Okay? So, this patient gets the crutches, the walker, and he or she has a whole week to 10 days to figure out how to do that really well without putting any weight in their ankle before I fix them, as opposed to learning and falling after I fix them. They have like a cozy you can attach to your crutches. No, a basket, something. So, yeah. Yes? The best way to all you have to do to reduce this really. What's that? The best way to honestly reduce this. And it's very simple. Actually, Dylan should come up and just give the demonstration.
No, not really.
Not so much? No.
You did good work here.
It's basically, if you pick up the big toe and pull it up and in, that fracture will reduce almost anatomically every time. If it doesn't, if you got great sedation if you need it, and you get a good reduction, and it's just not coming over, sometimes the deltoid ligament, especially in a this happens in a bimal equivalent. You saw in the first films how sublux it was laterally. There's no medium Leyland's fracture, but the reason that it's sublux laterally is because the deltoid ligament's torn. Sometimes the deltoid will flip up into the joint and get stuck. Okay? And I'll see it because I'm in the operating room and I fixed the fibula perfectly, or I'm having problems fixing the fibula. It like won't reduce, it won't go down, and I'll have to make an incision here, reach up there with whatever, and you flip all this tissue out of the joint. The deltoid rips off and gets stuck up in there. Okay? It's not very common. I've only had to do it a couple times in a decade, but it can happen. Okay. What was the other? Was that the question? Okay. Yeah, I basically would just take the heel and bring the foot over like this, okay? With my right hand, just bring the foot up and in, okay?
This leg ain't going any higher, buddy.
Okay. What's that?
When they were applying the splint, there was quite a lot of pressure over the...
Okay. You have to hold that mold while it's setting. If you let it go, if you like don't put any water on the OCL or whatever, and you're just waiting for the humidity to dry, you have to hold that reduction, because when they wake up and the perineals fire, it'll just sublux again laterally. So, anywho, yes. When they'll have a tendency to be in. When you reduce this, sometimes they're in a little bit of Aquinas, but it's going to be temporary unless they don't follow up. But I would say no. This is not one that necessarily has to be, that you would splint in Aquinas on purpose. Okay?
But is it better to be at 90 degrees?
It's always better to be at 90 degrees if you can. And with the exception that distal tibia fractures, if you bring the foot up into 90 degrees, they'll go into bad extension. Sometimes, and Achilles tears, you leave in some Aquinas. Those are the two. We're going to where everyone, I'm not, those were my two that I wanted to use to point out those principles again. I got more. Does anyone have some films they want to look at? Okay, ready? This is from Covenant.
Go to date. Go to number 4. I'll go to FTV.
Let me return this while you folks think about what's wrong with this lady. Okay, anyone who wants to tackle this? Any takers?
All right.
Okay. Lesser trochanter. Okay. Okay, it is. Okay.
So it looks like I would call that, if I were going to call you, I would say that's an intertrochanter fracture with angulation of about 30 degrees from the bone displacement. Comminuted, of course, displaced 30%.
Okay. Okay. Sure. Okay. Okay. Anyone else want to add to that or take away from it? No takers. Okay. What's that? Oh, I'm sorry. No. She fell at home. Okay. 80-some-year-old lady fell at home. Okay. Okay. This is a horse of a different color, and that's kind of why I bring it. All right. What you don't see here, okay, and you're correct. I mean, the lesser troch is busted and off, okay. What you don't see here is any discrete fracture line in the greater troch coming down, okay. It involves the lesser trochanter for sure. It does not involve the greater trochanter. That's what keeps this from being a classic inertroche. This is not an inertroche. Okay. The major fracture line that involves the shaft of the femur is here. Okay. And this is at the level of the lesser troch and below. So if I'm talking to my partner over the phone, he says, "Hey, can you check an X-ray for me?" I'm going to say, "Well, Dr. Jesko, this is a bad subtroch. Okay. It's at least a three-part subtroch. You've got, there is a type called the reverse obliquity. This is not it. But you've got the major fracture here is kind of at the lesser troch and below. Okay. And the lesser troch is on its own piece that comes all the way down to here. Okay. And this is a bad fracture because orthopedically this is not an easy one to fix. And it's unstable, and it's subject to failing. Okay, so it's trouble. A standard intertroch fracture is a slam dunk procedure orthopedically. This is anything but. Okay, so you know if you call it an intertroch and you get an orthopedic surgeon on the phone, he'll look at it and go, "Shit," because he or she goes from thinking, "Oh, intertroch. Sweet, half hour procedure, go home." And then he or she looks at this and goes, "This is my afternoon." Okay? So then you'll get, you know, yelled at for calling an intertroch, not because, you know, it's like some horrible, you know, mistake reading it, but because someone's day just got changed significantly. Okay? So this is actually a subtroch fracture. True intertroch, you need to see fracture lines that are kind of involving the greater troch and coming this way. Either through the base of the neck, here to here, in this area somehow, okay? And I have a different example of that if you want, okay, just to show the difference. But when the greater troch's intact and the fracture is kind of here and at this level, you're looking, this is a subtroch, and this is 2 to 3 hours of surgery the other day, okay? Significantly different. Anyways, if you want to X this out, and then open up the fluoro that says X-ray fluoro. If you open that up, you can see what we did to it. Okay, big wide incision, big long rod, screws in the head and neck, et cetera, just to control this. And her bone is horrible, and this looks great. I'm really happy with how it looks, but if it fails, it won't surprise me. Okay, because her bone is just crap. Okay. That cable I used to, that's what I did first. I cabled this piece with the lesser troch in it to reestablish the canal and make it into two pieces. And then we put this big head and neck piece with the greater troch in line with what I cabled and then ran the rod down it. But it's... What's that? If it fails, you probably keep some of the greater troch if you can because the abductor is attached to it. But if it fails, you end up taking the ball out, the neck out. You take all this bone out, put in half of a total hip replacement with the big special long stem that goes down the femur. Now, we're going to contrast that since we're talking about intertrochs. Here's the next patient to look up at Covenant. Okay? Now, and then just go to hip 2 views left.
You don't want the myocardial perfusion?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you anything about it. Okay. This is a lady fell on the same day. That's good. Yeah, do the pelvis. She also had a heart attack. So that's who they were just calling me off the phone. So she got stented, but I still have to fix her. So I got to fix her while she's on aspirin and Plavix. It might be a little messy. Questions while this is thinking? Okay. Here, when you look at this AP pelvis and come over here to the left hip, okay, you see fracture line here, coming all the way down through the troch area. Now, the lesser troch may be a little busted off here, too. But the major fracture line that the shaft is involved in comes directly through the inner trochee area. Okay, this is a. I know it doesn't probably look that much different, but it's a way easier fix. Okay, way easier fix to do this than the last one. These can go bad too, but initially this will be easier to fix. And this is a classic left inner trochee hip fracture. Okay. Maybe here. Yeah, first of all, there's a little malrotation. There's a bunch of air or something in the colon or bladder there. I don't know that. I don't know that I can say too much about being anything old there. No, they don't. They don't move. They don't line up very well, and maybe there is something going on in here, but. I can. Goodwin.
Yourself, first name?
I think Jerry. J. Yeah. See if I remember correctly. Humerus, two views left. I want to talk about humerus fractures. I just pulled this guy out of my head. Yeah. What things about humerus fractures do you kind of want to know? There's a lot of different humerus fractures, and we'll try to cover it briefly. But I think a lot of times, if people are having horrible trouble with pain control, then it's legitimate to keep them in. Okay. If you think that there's any neurovascular involvement, okay, in a shaft fracture like this, okay, specifically this fracture, what nerve are you worried about? Radial, absolutely. And you worry about it until it's healed, okay? So, yes, you absolutely worry about the radial nerve here, but if there's any, and you got to do a good exam, okay? I've seen people do the neurovascular exam on this and ask people to wiggle their fingers, and they'll go, you know, yeah, I can wiggle my fingers, you know, and people go, yeah, they're moving them. But if they can't, if they flex and then go back to where they were, that's not extension, okay? And when you see somebody with a true radial nerve palsy, they can't, they're doing everything they can, and their lumbricals will fire, and they'll get their fingers a little straight, but they actually truly extend at the MCPs, they cannot do it, or the wrist, okay? And so you really got to do a good exam, okay? That's an instance to keep them, okay, in some cases. If it's a proximal humerus fracture and the joint is still located, in most cases, if it's impacted and it's in generally okay alignment, they can go home in a sling. A fracture in the shaft of the humerus like this deserves a coaptation splint from the axilla around the elbow up over the shoulder, kind of mold it in place, kind of help them. The perfect thing is what's called a cuff and collar. It just goes around the wrist and around the neck, okay? But a sling is not the best, but okay with this. Okay, and if they're comfortable, they can go home. This guy was comfortable; he went home. Okay, when you start getting down here around the elbow, or if the condyles are involved, or you're down in here and there's displacement, those people virtually always get admitted and fixed. Okay, unless it's minimal and you can plan it and they're comfortable. Okay, but I just saw a guy in my office yesterday who has a 2.5 week old fracture right across the distal humerus that was missed. Okay, but it couldn't see it in the ER, couldn't see it, radiologist didn't see it. I took new x-rays in my office, and you can see it, and it's kind of flexed a little bit, but I'm going to leave him. He's 85. So those, I guess, I don't know if, does that answer your question? Okay. And this fracture, usually you can treat successfully, non-operatively. This guy, we treated for about 3 weeks in functional braces, cast braces, could not control him. Okay. And he ended up with a long plate from here to here. Okay. Okay. Next question. Okay. When they're, if they're, the, another instance, if it's a proximal humerus fracture that comes up into the head and the articular surface looks off and it's multiple pieces, sometimes those are going to get a hemiarthroplasty and those will sometimes stay in the hospital. Okay? If it's a younger person and it's really busted up and the surgeon on the phone thinks it needs to be fixed or should be fixed and thinks they're going to fix them soon, they might keep them too. But the other problem with those that are really smashed is the shoulder tends to swell like a son of a gun. And you just, again, you're trying to do surgery through this big, fat, tight, swollen shoulder, and it's trouble. Alright, who, anybody see this? Anybody see what's wrong here? Do you have dedicated elbow films? Go to the elbow films, and that way I will have given you a big hint. Hang in there, Dr. Stanek. I'm gone in a few minutes. All right. I'm going to make a call while you guys decide what's wrong here. What's the mechanism of this? How'd this happen? Fall off of monkey bars? Oof. This is bad. Anyone? Anyone want to take a shot at it, or shall I just rescue you? Okay. Okay. What about the growth plate laterally? Well, if this is the Saturday morning fracture conference in my residency, there's no way I could tell from the back of the room. And before I got grilled by my chief, I'd have to come up here and stare at it. So I will tell you, okay, that yes, you're correct. There's a medial epicondylar fracture here. There's a little bit of displacement. You don't know how much displacement because you don't have a good lateral yet that we've seen, okay? There is a fracture through, that's a medial epicondyle. There is a fracture through the lateral epicondyle. There's an orthopedic classification for this, and I'm not going to ask you about it, okay? But this fracture comes through here, crosses the growth plate, and probably exits either here or over here. But it also may continue all the way across. So this may be a very low transcondylar distal humerus fracture, but both the epicondyles involved, the growth plates involved, this is a bad injury, okay? This is trouble. And it's going to have to be fixed, okay? And I'll be curious to see how whoever took care of this went about fixing it. But this is trouble, big fat swollen elbow. I'm sure I'd be definitely checking pulses on this kid because this kid's going to really swell. You splint this kid, you're not going to splint him at 90. You're going to splint him probably in the neighborhood of like 45 to 60, and he's probably going to get admitted for neuro checks, et cetera, et cetera. That's what I'm thinking of in my head right now with this kid. All right. Do you have a good lateral, Dr. Breeze? That's not so good. Okay.
I think Jason's also had some. We also don't see as the distal radius and all the fracture as well.
He does. Okay. All right. Yeah. Bad. Bad.
Bad
day in the monkey bars. Okay. So let's go back to the menu. It's going to probably a three-pin sort of a deal here.
I don't know if that's been fixed yet or not. That's the 21st.
So oh, that's yesterday.
Happened yesterday.
That's yesterday. Who was on?
Family requested Jessica. He wasn't able to do it. Akbar punted and DeBerry punted. Went to field.
Okay. Okay. Can you show me the risk, just to for sake of completion? Basically, you got to reduce this. You got to put a couple pins in the lateral side, probably one pin on the medial side. 7-year-old kid will remodel that pretty well. The wrist is just a basically on what I'm just seeing. That's a bit of a buckle fracture. If it's a, it may be a salt or two that's off as well. But I need a good lateral. I don't have it. That's just a closed reduction with or without a pin. Okay, but that's what needs to happen with that elbow. But it's a bad injury for sure. Okay, bad injury for sure. But and the kid was the kid neuro intact and stuff like that. Okay, good, good. And that's, you know, Dr. Jesko probably had to punt. He wasn't on call. If he looked at this at all, he knew what it needed, and he knew he couldn't get to it. So, all right. You know, and that kind of comes back to, and this is an administrative thing, but maybe it'll help you guys understand a little bit. I'm on call today for both ERs. My tomorrow, I have to purposely schedule wide open so that I can take care of stuff like that. Okay? You know, so I have a few patients I have office time blocked off so that I could try to see the more urgent ER cases. And the rest of my day is open so that I can fix stuff. Okay? But that's what you end up having to do if you're going to take good care of people. If you're going to, you know. So, anyways. Next one. Got a couple minutes yet. Or am I out? Am I out of time, Bob, Mary Jo? Okay. Is this making sense so far? Okay, here's the other thing with that elbow. Okay, because you're gonna see a bunch of these. They're coming. Okay, they're coming in droves very soon. Okay, if you look at those elbow films, and you're not sure, you just can't figure it out. Just get comparison views of the other elbow. There's nothing wrong with that. Okay, you look at them both side by side and to help you figure it out. Pediatric elbows, some of the hardest films to read, okay? So don't feel bad. Just get some comparison views, and, you know, that's it's not a huge deal. Okay. There's some good
extra stuff here.
Oh, you gave it away. So yeah, okay, but now you got to come up and show me why you think that.
Well, there's a fracture there, but
yeah.
Just makes you think of multiple
myeloma. Absolutely, it makes you think. Yes, you should think of multiple myeloma. That's a classic. What the orthopedics they call it, the shotgun appearance to the bone. Okay, whole bunch of little. Whole bunch of little, you know, holes in the bone. Okay, bunch of little holes in the bone. So yeah, probably myeloma, crappy bone, or you know, so. Yeah, but what's wrong with this? He did the hard part. Who wants to do the fracture part? Dr. Septino already knows. So, go ahead, Dr. Breeze.
That's closed, right, Frank?
Yes.
Okay, closed. And if we're going to go down our little list, we're going to go down the list of how we're doing this. It is appearing to be this displaced. The distal portion is laterally, it's radially displaced.
Same. Radially and laterally, same.
Yes, with apex, it's laterally, maybe about 10 to 15 degrees.
Yeah, minimal. Yep.
And she said malrotated. I can't tell.
Okay. Okay. Do you have another view? Because that, all that on the AP view I would agree with. Okay. Do you have a lateral?
I don't think we have a cross table.
That was a cross table.
I think the cross table is another view.
I hope they rotate it through the fracture site. I love that. Does this hurt, sir? That's another great illustration of the bone. Yeah. So.
That was the neurovascular exam after this.
How did this patient do, Dr. Stabenow? How did this patient do this? Yeah, because this is something this is a big lesion in here.
Yeah, it actually goes right through the lesion.
Exactly. Yeah, and he could have done this rolling over in bed. You know what I mean? I mean this is bad. This is bad, nasty, ugly bone. So that was the other question I was going to ask. This is a pathologic fracture. That's another term for this. So, and if you look at some of those other views. In orthopedic oncology, there's different ways to look at bone tumors when you're looking at them on an X-ray. And one of my teaching professors used to say, "What is the lesion doing to the bone, and what's the bone doing to the lesion?" Okay? Because in a pathologic fracture, if you look at this bone, look up here. Okay? There's not too much to see up here. I mean, this is a big, huge lesion down here, but the fracture sort of doesn't get at what I want to show you. But the bone marrow doesn't look normal, and you see that the cortex is thinning. Okay, the lesion is eating away at the bone. Okay, yeah. They would sometimes call it endosteal scalloping. Okay, the lesion is eating away at the bone, and the bone is not reacting. Okay? In benign tumors, you'll see a dense white border around the lesion because most bone tumors are slow growing, they're mostly benign, and the body has a chance to react to them. And so the body will build a wall around the lesion. The lesion can still expand, but you'll see this white, very distinct border. It's called a zone of transition. You see a distinct zone of transition. They're virtually always benign because while the lesion is eating at the bone, it's slow, and the bone's response to that is to make more bone, and so you get a very thick white line around the lesion. You see no reaction by the bone here. It can't. It's quickly growing. It's sick, and it can't beat back the lesion. So the lesion is attacking the bone. There's no response by the bone here. And it thins and then it breaks. Okay. Good. It's palliative care, and Dr. Wilhan can give you kind of a great treatise on this kind of stuff. But you know, this is I'm going to talk with Dr. Bartnick, whoever the oncologist is, and I'm going to say, what's this guy's prognosis? What is his, you know, fitness for surgery? Okay, because you can look at the patient, you know, riddled with cancer, but maybe he's beating it back, maybe he's not. But is the patient suffering? Okay, are they hurting all the time? Can they not get comfortable? Is that their dominant arm? You know, and they'd like to be able to at least feed themselves, you know, and what time they have left. Those are legitimate things to know, and it goes to the kind of the compassionate care of the patient in this situation. Okay, he's a right hand dominant person, and they're treating him, and he's riddled with lesions. But you know, it's not like he's going to die tomorrow, and he's an acceptable surgical risk. I would plate this. long plate, solidly fix the bone as best you can. Okay? That'll allow the guy some early elbow range of motion, allow him to, you know, give him good pain relief, he or she good pain relief, hopefully minimize their suffering and help them to be, you know, more functional in what time they have left. Just like, you know, to some degree, hip fracture patients in cancer patients or hospice patients, they can't even sit up and interact with their family or their world, and they're in horrible pain. So it's still an acceptable thing to fix those people, you know, whether they got a month to live or you don't know when.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Sure. The best I could, try to reduce and cast or splint it as best I could. You know, if they're telling me he can't go to the operating room, pain medicine and see how they do.